Hello and welcome to Two Crates, Two Crowbar, the 2014 sequel to the blockbuster podcast The Crate and Crowbar. I'm Marsh Davis, Revengeance, and I'm joined this week by Tom Francis, Tokyo Drift, A Good Day to Graham Smith.
Hello.
And introducing Craig Pearson Origins.
Hello.
Hello, Craig. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
You're a long-time PC gamer, writer, and RPS man, and freelancer.
Yeah, I'm not tied to any particular... Basically, no angle is the most money in front of me. Actually, it doesn't need to be the most money, just any money. So, has anyone paid me for this?
No. I was going to offer you booze, but, you've brought your own drinks. So.
Yeah, I'm doing this one for free.
What have you been playing this week?
Even though it's frowned upon. I've been playing Rust. Has anyone else been playing Rust?
I played a bit of Rust.
Everyone's just played a bit of Rust.
I've been playing a lot of Rust, but not playing it as, like... I've not been building anything. I've just been walking around and looking at the sunset and helping Martin...
find my way.
Yeah, kill yourself many, many times. You killed yourself in both games I played you with this week.
One was intentional, though. Yeah. In my defence. The other one, not so much.
Well, the intentional one, we both jumped off just for the hell of it.
Exactly. That was a happy suicide.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether I like Rust that much, based on what we played. It seems like this...
Well, we didn't really play it, though.
No, I guess so. So it's a survival game.
There is only the goal to survive in it, that's all there is.
Hmm.
I mean, you can survive by building things, you can survive by finding things, but there's no other sort of,
How's it different from DayZ? It's not quite the same kind of world structure, is it?
You build stuff in that, basically. You build either a tiny little one-room shack or a giant sprawling village with friends, which we've not done yet. So you, when you start off, you got a rock, and there are trees, and there are rocks around. You go and hit a tree, and you get some wood, and then you go and hit a rock, and you combine everything you get there, and you make yourself a nice little hatchet, and that speeds up your eventual building.
The rock you get at the start, you can use to mine other rocks?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. See, I stumbled across an axe by looting someone, and I was like, oh, I guess I can cut down the trees now, and that's when I first went up and started using the trees. What's the kind of... threat in the game? Obviously there's other players.
There's radiation.
Okay.
There's bears and wolves. It's mostly people or you being clumsy.
Okay.
People will just kill you for nothing. It's like DayZ where they just you can either put investment in time of actually building stuff or you can put investment in time of making yourself a bit of a dick. So you can just take things from other people. I mean, I've been mugged about twice. And the second time I snapped and said, I'm not going to take this anymore. I started chasing after the guy who tried to mug me. he pulled out a shotgun, and the game's got local VIP chat. So I don't know if you can do it in the game, but he said, put your hands up. And I went, okay. And I didn't do it, and he went, put your hands up. So I thought he was maybe expecting me to put my hands up, maybe even playing DayZ before. But what I did was just pull my rock out and start chasing him, hitting him. And I heard him scream over the VIP and run away. Eventually killed me. I knew I was going to die at that point, but at that point I was like, I'm not going to take this anymore, goddammit.
But it doesn't have anything like Daisy's starvation and needing to drink water, does it?
It's starvation, okay. You don't need to drink. You get chicken breast by killing pigs. And wolves. And bears. And deer.
Is that just because it's an alpha, or is that...
I can't tell.
Are there any chickens at all?
No, there are no chickens. It may just be because it's Unity and you've yet to buy the pork chop asset from the Unity store. So, it's really good fun. I don't know why I enjoy it. These games, I can never really explain why I enjoy them. A lot of it's to do with the fact that there are other people in the world just doing their own thing. So at night time, you have a torch in the game as well. And if you put the torch on, people will be able to see where you are. Which is not a good idea most of the time in these games. But at night time, I just love the fact that I'd just be walking along, maybe see a torch spark out in the distance or see the flicker of a campfire.
It seems like the part in which I spawned seemed like it was more organised around a single linear road. Is that?
Well, there's only one road in the game.
Right.
And it goes all the way around the world, as far as I can tell.
And what is the world? Is it an island then?
It's the edge of a continent, I think, as far as I can tell. There's one side that goes into the water and the other side. I don't think it matters. I think you can just climb over and keep on walking.
Oh, really?
And it'll be empty. It doesn't matter. I think they might have plans to fill it, but, if you climb over the mountain and carry on going, it'll just be empty ground. Gary was saying how I think they put an asset in there once when they're testing something out, like a white cube.
We told the story last time, didn't we?
I think Tom Senior mentioned it, yeah.
That's a piece of like you that people worshipped. Yeah.
So that's good, you know, that was probably out there in the middle of nowhere, basically.
So you haven't been building stuff in the game yourself?
I tend to not build things in these games, so I'm not very good at that kind of stuff.
What have you seen being built?
White cube. So, well, I've seen villages. I mean, the most impressive thing we saw was just that giant stairway to nowhere. Which is just like up and up and up and up and up and up. But we could see the entire world from there.
It took us how long to climb? It must have been...
About 30 minutes.
Really? I thought it was longer than that.
Well, you were just running around in a circle going up and you fell off once as well, remember?
Did I? No, I didn't. I was okay.
What is this made of?
Stairs. It's wood stairs in the game. Like, you craft stair blocks, basically.
Right.
And go dum-dum-dum-dum on top. And that had the Jurassic Park gate as well, or at least I thought it was Jurassic Park gate and the road, but you could just walk around it. It was bizarre, it's just gate in the middle of the road, but there's nothing on either side of it.
All these people trying to kill us before they realise that actually PvP damage had been turned off on our server. So they're running up, slamming us with their weapons, and then they stop and then wave.
So I mean, I tend to just enjoy exploring those worlds, you know, walking around and seeing what, like, say, watching people interact.
Didn't you also haunt somebody?
Yeah, I roleplay. Well, technically, I was more like roleplaying the director of the Blair Witch Project. because the game sort of encourages a certain level of being a hermit. And I was in the middle of nowhere, and I thought I was alone, and then I noticed a flash of light in the corner somewhere, but it went off. So I followed it where I thought it was, roughly, and I found this tiny little shack, one-room shack, the most basic thing I can build, pushed up against the cliff face, and the only way you could get into it was by ducking underneath a rock and coming out into this little gap and then knocking on a door. And I knew the guy. I could hear like this gentle little shuffling noise on the inside. It's really quite quiet, quite relaxing. It's quite nice. No one around. You just hear this of someone just toiling away in this little shack. And at that point, I didn't have anything. I didn't have food or whatever. But I had lots of wood. And you can craft campfires. So what I did was I crafted a campfire and put it outside his door. Lit it, because you can see the lights going through the door. Knocked on the door and then ran away. And I saw him coming out, because the way it models light is it's quite bright to a distance, and then it's dark, you can't see beyond it. You know, like your eyes, you just. So I hid just out of the way, and I could see him coming out, going, with the guy's bow and arrow drawn, he's like, what's going on here? I'm on my own. And then he stomped it out, as far as it, you know. And then I returned again after about 2 minutes and let three of them outside. did the same thing. At this point, he started getting quite agitated with his, like, gesticulating. He wasn't talking over VIP, and if I knew you could do the VIP at that point, I would have probably been making a ghost noise over the, over the thing, but I couldn't. And then he eventually killed me after he found me putting five of them outside. I just wanted him to have this little story. I wanted him to have this little story of someone just trying to, well, whatever I was doing. I didn't really know what I was doing at the time, I'm trying to spook him out. But, then I died and spawned elsewhere randomly in the world. But yeah, those kind of games were those kind of sort of moments are the special. I mean, Rust and Daisy. Rust, you can just change the world. Daisy, you can't. You know, you're scavenging, and whereas in Rust, you're actually building stuff, and that's the one key difference that Gary decided he wanted to make. Because he admitted as much that they just wanted to make a Daisy game. He said they loved the game and thought we're going to make our own version of it.
What do you think he's going to add to it? What do you want him to add to it?
I don't really know, to be honest. I haven't really thought that far. I just
everything will rust. Just get worse and worse and worse.
Well, there is that. That's literally a thing, isn't it? I think buildings decay over time, as you can come across against.
I don't think they collapse, as in like they don't decay properly; they just disappear.
Oh, really?
But that might come. Oh, you see, just an easier way to find your friends would be good. But it was kind of fun just finding you. I mean, the airdrop thing's really smart. I mean, I thought it was a Neanderthal world. I didn't realise that it was modern as well when I started it. So you join this world and you've got a rock and some sticks. Then an airplane flies overhead, and you're like, what's going on here? But we can use, when Martin and I were in the world, we actually used that to find each other, because I was like, where did that airplane fly over you? straight above, and I was like, alright, if we go here and here and here, and then we found each other. Which I think is really smart. You know, I like games that allow you to sort of figure that kind of stuff out. But it would also be good to just be able to join each other up and hang around.
That's the most fun I've had in both games so far, has been just that kind of pathfinding aspect where you try and work out where you are in relation to somebody and kind of interpret the world around you.
Yeah.
Because it makes you, like a lot of games, especially from the first person kind of cinematic mod, they throw all these kind of millions and millions of dollars at their art departments slave away for years, and then you just run past all of it without a second thought. And you don't really kind of interpret it or look at it hard. Mm. And that's the major advantage of these games. I don't think I've felt that in any game genre previously, that I'm really kind of inspecting the environment for clues in that way.
Yeah, not even Minecraft, actually.
No, no.
I mean, this needs more recognisable areas as well. And perhaps some, like, actual names in the world would help. Just say you're here and then, you know.
Can you do stuff like find a paper map within the world like you can in DayZ?
I don't think so, no. I mean, the nature of it is that someone's already mapped the world, so when Martin and I were trying to figure out where we were, I just opened up the Steam browser in Steam and just looked for the DayZ, the Rust map and went around to see what I could find. But that didn't actually help me this time, because, like I say, we don't actually know much about the world and there's no place names or anything like that.
What are the radiated villages and stuff like that? What do you get if you can...
It's better loot, really. But you can also get the same sort of loot if you just build a bow and arrow and shoot the zombies, because they'll come run towards you. And they take 4 arrows to kill. And they're not that difficult to kill, but they roughly have the same loot as the irradiated buildings, so you don't really need to put yourself in any danger to kill that stuff. You just need aggro things that are quite slow-moving and quite easy to kill. But yeah, I'm having fun with that.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'll go back to it in preference of DayZ or not.
Just going to just swap between the two, really. Get bored with one, just jump in the other, really. And take screenshots. That's what I spent a lot of time taking screenshots in Rust. A lot more than DayZ, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because Sunset's pretty.
Yeah, I don't think I'm really cut out for the kind of games where you have to click on things repeatedly in order to harvest their resources. I think, I was saying the game beforehand, I think if I have to click on anything more than 3 times in order to harvest its maximum resources, that's I don't want to play that game ever again. I've done that now.
It's a thin line.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know. I just like instant gratification. Or rather, it's not that. I do appreciate that you need to go and find resources in order to craft things. That's an interesting compulsion for me. But I don't like things being put in the way of my creativity or things that feel like a pointless time sink. And even when you're cutting wood, in reality, that requires kind of level of concentration, which just simply clicking repeatedly does not match. And in no ways, clicking on something repeatedly interesting.
What you want is a perfectly modelled axe and a perfectly modelled swing and a perfectly
modelled yeah,
or like Greenwood with the receiver.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
Quite satisfying.
I played Receiver actually recently on the advice of this podcast. It's great.
Yeah,
it's a game in which your gun is fastidiously modelled. We've talked about it at length on the podcast before, but if you haven't already downloaded it, you should. Cool stuff.
I've been playing, I played about half an hour of Metal Gear Solid Revengeance yesterday, and it's all you're Raiden from the Metal Gear Solid series, and he's a cyborg ninja with a sword, and it's got a mode in it where you can precisely swing your sword to slice up your enemies.
Yeah,
and
that's cool.
The slices actually happen at the point that you cut them in half, and then there's trees in the world and other bits of scenery that you can actually go up and use, and it's great fun to just go up to a tree and anchor your swing and slice it and watch it tumble over.
How does angling work?
It's kind of you're just using the right analog stick, and it draws a kind of trace line as you move it around. And then once you've got the line of the angle that you're holding your arm, you just swing the analog stick directionally across, basically to the opposite side. And that
there's a little PC game called Tiny and Big that used to had sort of similar.
Grandpa's Trousers, I think, was the subtitle.
Yeah, it's a strange game. It's a lovely game. Mm. You know, everyone should buy it. It's great fun. But yeah, you could angle. The original idea, you could really draw out where you wanted the slices to be. You can do wavy lines and stuff like that, and you had a laser beam cut out, but the eventual release game was just dragging a line and it would slice. But you can do all these little tiny little thin slices of things as well.
It also had a grappling hook in it as well, so you could like slice things and then use your grappling hook to actually pull it over. And that was really satisfying.
Yeah.
Because the levels were made out of these like huge kind of beams of stone and stuff.
Yeah.
So you'd be cutting up these like really, really big pieces of geometry, and then they would be governed by physics, so they'd slide down if you cut them diagonally, and they'd tumble over and stuff. Yeah, it was cool.
The other thing I've been playing is Just Cause 2 multiplayer.
Hey!
And it's interesting, because I played it during its beta, and they would have like beta weekends, so you would get suddenly 600 or 1,000 people all piling on the same server or two, and it was just utter chaos, and that was what was fun about it. Just Cause 2, if people haven't played it, is a third-person action game that came out a few years ago, set on a set of beautiful tropical islands in which you have a grappling hook that you can use to pull yourself along the ground or slow your descent if you're falling from an airplane by firing it at the ground underneath you. Or use it to kind of fly, basically, because you've got a reusable parachute in your backpack and you can just keep firing that and using the grappling hook to pull you along and that sort of stuff. Or you can tether people together as well, so you could tie a jeep to a plane and then fly the plane around with the jeep underneath and so forth. And so, and the missions weren't that great, to be honest. And the combat wasn't that great. But it was the kind of game where you could make your own fun just playing around with the tools. And so multiplayer of that is the same sort of thing. And doing that on a server with 600 other people all smashing planes into the Zeppelin stuff. But the thing is that now it's actually out and there's hundreds or thousands of servers.
Yeah.
There is no server that has 600 people on it anymore. Like the most I could find was about 350. And just that meant that people were spread out too much to ever really get that same sense of chaos. And they've added things since I used to play it, like game modes. You can do like a destruction derby or a race. But it's kind of the same as Grand Theft Auto 4's multiplayer, because we used to play that in the office. We never did the modes.
No.
We just messed around with the physics and did our own fun. So it's great for messing around with the physics and little bits of chaos, but not actually as good as I found it during the beta. Yeah. And then,
I found one server. So occasionally a Russian server pops up with like 900 people. I found that like a week and a half after the mod was released. But exactly. There's no focus for people to hop in and... But, I mean, the 900 one was quite fine. Anyway, the one that I found was like, the official server had 1,200 people on it.
Jesus.
Yeah. And mostly, I mean, you know, they had like the giant gatherings of people in certain points, like the Mile High Club and the airport. There's always chaos at the airport. But I love just like getting in a plane and flying around. Like, I played it almost like a police helicopter. I just fly around and watch things happening and then I go off and fly. I enjoy finding just one other person in that. And I found myself playing it where I would try and give them a moment that they would just always remember.
Hmm.
So I would like try and crash the biggest plane in front of this one person in the middle of nowhere, just so he'd be like, oh, what's going on? Why is this happening? I was role-playing emergent gameplay at that point.
It's every server I found, I don't know if this is true of just all the servers, but had basically a cheat menu where you could just spawn any vehicle at any time.
The game, the full version of the mod had that in it. I don't know, I mean, I've never played with the server file, so I don't know what you enable, what you disable, or whatever. But I would imagine most people just left it as it is, and that's the way the game's set up.
Because it's just, you're thinking about the way DayZ and Rust kind of draw players to points, like the plane flying overhead and dropping resources, or the having to find water pumps to drink, and the way that these tools draw people together and kind of give a shape and a purpose.
Yeah.
And the way the Just Cause 2 multiplayer mod did it when I played the betas was that the resource that everyone wanted was vehicles. So everyone would go to the airport and was desperately trying to take their plane off before someone crashed into them or blew them up. And that kind of created that focal point. But now you just kind of spawn in the sky, skydiving down onto the island, and you can just bring up a menu and spawn anything you want. And so just that little change I found made it... there were ways in which to create your own fun still, but it got boring for me much quicker than it would have before. The most fun I had with it was, as soon as you spawn, you can just spawn a speedboat. And so you're falling out of the sky in this boat. And the way the physics work are completely fucked, basically, where speedboats, you can kind of propel them through the air.
They added that. It's boost, isn't it?
Oh, it's not just boost. If you just accelerate with some of the boats,
they've added that as well.
And it's also, if you then crash into the sea, you will go deep under the sea, and then when you bounce back to the surface, you will bounce back with such force that it then launches you back into the air.
That's great.
So you can just fly across the entire length of the island, occasionally skimming off the top of a mountain. And sometimes your speedboat will blow up, but you won't die. So at that point, you can just like parachute out of your own speedboat, immediately spawn another speedboat and keep going and just rocket around the world. And I did have great fun playing around with the physics of it, and a few moments of gathering people around the Mile High Club and just crashing planes into it.
I think it's a game that it's fun if you gather friends and everyone play multiplayer for an hour and maybe just like everyone grappling at the same plane or something, you know. That's what I wanted to do, was just get everyone grappling at each other and just firing in the big giant line of people.
I wish it had, like, we used to do that in Grand Theft Auto 4 in the office, where, you know, position a helicopter over the canal and then try and jump bikes over the top of it. But it kind of, the replay editor in that kind of focused that stuff in such a way, because like, we could then afterwards take that stuff and make something from it. I wish Just Cause 2 had something similar to that.
Didn't it have it on PlayStation or something? There was a, like a video editor on PlayStation.
Yeah, they had the last 30 seconds or something you could dump to YouTube, I think. But yeah, everyone will recognise that, and you know, when the next one comes out, they'll probably have more of that.
We've been playing Nidhogg.
We have been playing Nidhogg, which by the time this podcast goes out, will be out.
Yeah, and you'll probably have bought it if you're listening, regular listeners to the podcast.
So we have really nothing to add.
No. It's great though. I haven't played it until today. I played the original, whatever version of it was, before it got released.
It wasn't, I mean, the version we had of it, I guess, was it from the IGF or something like that?
Yeah,
I guess so. And it just kind of got passed around in these circles.
But that was just a single. So now they've added, it's a, how it works is you start on a single screen, there's two duelists, both holding swords, and you have to kill the other one to get an advantage, then you can move a screen across in one direction, and there's a chain of, how many screens? Four screens?
Like three in either direction, I think.
And then when you get to the last screen, you've won, and you get eaten by a giant pink worm. which is victory. The ultimate victory condition that should be in every game.
It's like a crowd applauding you as you come out. You won!
A munch. So they've added another three different versions of those sequence of levels, and each one has their own challenges. So there's ones with conveyor belts on, there's ones which are set in the clouds, which disintegrate beneath you.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other one? Is there another one?
There's mines, the castle, the clouds, and another one.
And another one. Yeah. And a whole bunch of new moves as well, which weren't in the original game.
The main one, like, mostly they've expanded the melee moves. So it used to be before, if you dropped your sword, either because you threw it at a person and they deflected the blow, or it got knocked out of your hands, then you could punch, I think, your opponent. But it wasn't really much good if they had still had their sword.
Right.
Didn't really give you much chance. But now there's a kind of dive kick move you can do, where you can leap in the air and then dive kick down upon them to knock their sword out of their hands.
I think you can do a sweep as well, can't you? Like a leg sweep.
I haven't discovered that yet. The other thing you can do is if you dive kick someone and they're on the ground, you can then snap their neck or decapitate them with your sword before they get up again. It's a really violent game.
But all the blood's not red, so that's fine.
Yeah.
Unless you play a red character.
It kind of, if you kill someone, then their body kind of disintegrates into gloop and then like seeps to the floor. Which like, it's really cool in terms of the way that you're painting the levels, but it also just makes it seem like everyone is made out of paint.
Yeah,
because your blood is always the same colour as your skin anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like you're just a little bag of fluid.
Good nice. Music as well. Trippy music, and to match the trippy visuals. Who's the composer for the music?
Daedalus. Which is a name that I think I'm supposed to know, but don't.
Same here.
I've heard the word, that's all.
I'm thinking of Cornelius when I think of that. Similar kind of genre as well.
He's Cornelius.
He's a musician. Makes similar music.
Did you guys hear about Samurai Gun from anywhere other than me?
No, I think you're the first person to mention it.
I talked about it a bit on the
podcast. I've got it for. You should play it.
I was just wondering, because I couldn't really gauge. Nidhogg is obviously, like, the press have been talking about it for years, and I feel like it's word has spread about that, and people know what it is, and they're all like, oh, that thing is finally coming out. Whereas I feel like with Samurai Gun, it's held in just as high regard as Nidhogg by the people who play it. But I feel like it's been quite niche. I just know it from going to PAX and being exposed to it there. People I met up with at PAX and who I know have tweeted about it, but that's it. Like, outside of that, I don't see anyone talking about it as much, so I'm trying to figure out whether it caught on, or...
So has it been released?
It came out, like, I feel like it was a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago.
Probably
it's released.
Type of release again, to
be honest. It's been published by the Cards Against Humanity company. I guess they're just called Cards Against Humanity. And I'm not sure in what way. I think that maybe they just funded it and made the money back. but it's a single screen, extremely fast paced duel game where you're both samurais with guns and you can slash with your sword or you can shoot, and you only have like 3 shots or something per life, but you die a lot, so you get them back really quickly. But if you shoot at somebody and they slash, then they can bounce your bullet back and kill you. And if you slash at someone and they slash, then it blocks the slash. And so it's all about just the precise timing of those things. And it's ultra, ultra bloody and brutal. And I think out of Nidhogg, Towerfall and that, I think it's the most brutal and the most twitch-based and the most kind of, probably the most skill-based. like, the best player always wins. There's no, like, plucky comebacks or beginner's luck. It's just, if you're not absolutely lightning fast, you get some good kills, but you will lose overall because the kills are happening so fast that, you know, the winning player will have, like, 25 or something. But it is really, like, it's beautifully depicted and really, really satisfying to play. But Nidhogg's out, so I'm not actually saying play this instead of Nidhogg.
I definitely prefer Nidhogg. Maybe it's because I'm not as good as Samurai Gun. And Samurai Gun does feel like it's more familiar to me based on... It's more similar to the kind of games that have gone before it, those kind of single-screen duelist games. So we talked about them at length on the podcast before, going back to the good old days of Jump and Bump. It doesn't seem... I suppose it is the way you can parry shots and things is more sophisticated than a lot of those games, like... what's the name of it? Bollocks. Gun. Soldnat. Soldnat?
Soldat?
Soldat. Yeah. There you go. And its successors like Cobalt. And things like that.
Yeah. You thought it was Gun.
Gun.
Thing with guns, you know, game with the guns.
You know, that one.
Quake.
Yeah, I didn't really feel it progressed much on that. And there's something about the way those environments are laid out where it's scrolling from top to bottom and from left to right that makes it feel kind of indebted to its predecessors in a way that Nidhogg weirdly doesn't. Like, there's something about the fact that in Nidhogg, you're only ever armed with swords and you actually sword fight with them in that you have to hold your sword at the right level in order to parry the sword. Yeah. That makes it feel like quite a different sort of game from those other kind of twitch-based single-screen dual games.
Yeah. Samurai Gun has, like, reeds and stuff that you hack through, so, like, destructible parts of the scenery, and then they grow back over time, which is quite cool. And if the match is drawn, if two players have the same score, then it cuts to you fighting on, like, a silhouetted horizon at sunset. And I played at the, I played with the Hayash guys, and they have a house rule that when you get down to that showdown thing, you both have to duck and stay bowed to the ground until the sun has finished setting. And then you can get up and down, which is awesome. I think that should be an actual rule of the game. have been playing Star Sector. Am I getting that right? Yes, okay. It used to be called Starfarer, then it changed its name.
Oh, thank God they changed the name to something so much more memorable.
Yeah, something you'll never forget. And then something else called Star Something Else. Star Drive, yes. Yeah. Suddenly got a lot of attention, and because the game I was interested in had changed its name recently, I thought, oh, that must be the game I was interested in. And isn't the greatest game with this press? But actually, no, Star Sector got no press, as far as I can see. But it's a space game, surprise, surprise. Really? Just don't call it Star anything. Like, it's hard enough to tell space games apart because they all have pretty much the same aesthetic. They all look black screen with the little ships going around.
I can tell them all apart, but...
like, top-down 2D indie in space games in particular. I say that as somebody who's making one. Mine looks just the same as everybody else's.
You call Star Star.
Except it's much uglier.
Star. That would be more memorable, actually.
But Star Sector is, I think it's quite a complicated game, but I haven't really dug into its full scope yet. But it's a game where you can control a single ship, but you can also kind of amass a fleet of them. And it's top-down perspective, and there's a kind of variety of different missions you can do, or there's a kind of, I think it's sort of an open world mode where you kind of build your fleet up from scratch. So there's like a sort of galactic screen where you have your little group of ships is one unit, and then you kind of click on them and send them to different, like, parts of the galaxy. And then if they encounter any resistance, then you switch pretty much seamlessly to the kind of combat mode, which is more zoomed in. And then the way the ships work, the ships are beautifully modelled in terms of every... They all have, like, multiple weapon systems, and every one of them has, like, a line of firing arc drawn onto it, and you will see the firing arc of all of your forward-facing guns and the firing arc of all your lasers that are on the side that can shoot in a wider arc, and how far your missiles can shoot and stuff. And you're also, like, they're quite cumbersome, so they kind of, it takes a while to turn. And you also, I think you can turn faster when you're not firing, or some kind of mobility bonus for, kind of not being in combat. So sometimes it's better not to attack people and to, be more maneuverable. And so it's like battles between capital ships, really. There are some small ships, but most of them are just huge and have, like, four different weapon systems, and they all have different modes of fire and stuff. And the way the ships work, it's really strange. They have shields, some of which don't cover, they're like a bubble, but they don't necessarily cover all of your ship. Like the starting ship you get, the shield covers like the front 270 degrees, so the back 90 degrees is vulnerable. And it's up to you when you turn them on and when you turn them off. But if they're on, then when they get hit, instead of like having an energy bar that depletes, you have a thing called flux, which increases. And so your flux capacity is, a serious thing. And so you actually have flux capacitors, which is awesome. And firing your weapons increases your flux, and getting hit increases your flux. And, if you have your shields up. And then, like, I think your special abilities increase it as well. And then certain types of weapons are better against shields, and certain types, are useless against them. And then certain types are better at destroying hulls. And there's like EMP weapons and stuff. And the way all those things interplay with each other is really, intricate and sophisticated. And it seems like it's probably quite cool. But it's so complex that even after several hours of playing, I still haven't got into the meat of it. I'm still just about learning the systems and figuring out how, like, when your flux is at maximum, there's a button you can press to vent it, where, like, all these kind of vents open on your ship and this stuff gushes out, which looks really cool. But then energy weapons are different to all others, that they do more damage when you have more flux. But flux is kind of like overheating. So if you're at maximum flux, everything else is shutting down and you can't move very fast and your shields are overloaded, but suddenly your energy weapons are really powerful. So you kind of, you fire all conventional weapons, you build up heat basically, and then use your energy weapons to kind of, I guess, capitalize on that while you're cooling down. But it's, I've seen some Let's Plays of it where people are playing it on a more advanced level than I've reached yet, and it looks so cool when there's like, you're going around the galaxy and you get tackled by some interceptors or something, and you dispatch like, okay, my two wingmen are going to go over here and deal with those guys on the like the large-scale galactic map. And I'm going to take this fight myself, and then the other four guys I've got are all going to go and take this missile boat. And then you'll go into the combat mode and be, you know, venting your flux and whatever. And then he wins his battle and zooms back out and just sees, like, okay, how are those guys doing? Are they're actually struggling with that factory ships I sent them to deal with. So now I'm going to fly over there and help them out and... fighting it on those, like, two different scales. Yeah, it's really cool.
Is this Star Sector?
Star Sector.
Okay.
What's the kind of meta game thing? Is there like, a ecosystem to it?
Yeah, it's another thing where I don't know how deep it goes because I haven't got into it enough yet, but it seems to be, you have, like, each of your ships has individual cargo capacity, and when you loot things, there's sort of trading materials, trading resources and stuff, as well as weapons and as well as scrap and things. And then there seems to be space stations where you can trade that stuff, but I've never safely made it to any of them. So I think there's quite a lot going on. It seems to be all about, I don't know if there's a story to what you're supposed to be doing, but it feels like you're just sort of trying to survive, and it's about managing, you know, how much damage you take in a fight versus the cool loot you got from it, and then how much you can afford to repair your ship and buy new missile launchers for it and upgrade it and all that stuff.
It's weird that I have to ask this now, but is this a finished game?
It's still in kind of alpha access. It doesn't... I mean, there's enough there that you probably won't find its rough edges because it's such a, so incredibly deep and, like, takes a long time to learn. So by the time you've learned it, I've probably finished the game.
The weird thing is, listening to that, is it doesn't sound like a game you play. Is it because you're playing making a top-down space game that you picked up?
No, it's actually ages ago that I played it. It just looks really good. It's just very shallow. It's a very pretty game.
I've not got a lot to say about it, but there's a game that I'm going to play this week called space, the return of the Pixel Frazer. And the reason it's really good is it takes the idea, like, the very initial thought the guy had was, what happens to those asteroids and your little ship once it gets out of the box that Asteroid was played in? And he's made this entire asteroid-looking universe, all these different lenses and stuff like that. So you get all these crazy different ships and all these crazy different things to fly around in. But his idea was, like, say, if you just go beyond the screen of Asteroid, what's in that universe? So I got that in my account. I need to Google it because I keep on forgetting the name.
There's a cool version of asteroids that factors in relativity called relativistic asteroids. And you can do things like, I think you set the speed of light on it because, you know, you wouldn't really see any of the effects if the speed of light was as fast as it really is. So you accelerate your ship to relativistic speeds, and then all of the asteroids that are not traveling as fast as you suddenly kind of compress to these lines that are flashing by you, and they all kind of compress in the same dimension, so it seems like they're all horizontal lines going past you, and it's actually because of the space dilation that you've gone through that causes everything else to seem to contract in the direction you're moving. And then you can do things like spawn asteroids, because it's kind of like more of an experiment, like a physics tool than it is a game. You can spawn asteroids at your current velocity, so you're traveling at, you know, 0.9 of the speed of light, and you spawn a bunch of asteroids and they seem stationary to you, and then you slow down and they carry on traveling at the speed you were traveling at. And so you can keep doing that in loads of different directions, and then you make this crazy fucked up universe where no matter what speed you're going at, something else is always traveling at nearly light speed relative to you. So you're just constantly seeing these little like horizontal lines flashing past you in different directions. And if you want to accelerate after one and try and catch up with it, then as you approach its speed, you see it kind of dilate again from a just completely featureless line into a full shape of an asteroid as you get up to its speed, and it you get in its inertial frame. By default, collision is on. If you collide with anything, you instantly die. It's like, you could probably turn that off just permanently, because there's no point in playing this in any sense if you can collide with things.
You've played Elite, the new one. Elite, yes. Dangerous.
Yeah.
What's that like? Should I care?
Or is it going to be really, really good.
Is it really, really good?
Yeah, I'm not surprised
like
how good it was.
X Rebirth?
No, it's yeah, it doesn't, well, I mean, okay, so Elite, my flavor of Elite Frontier, Elite 2 Frontier, so that was released to 1994? So it was almost 20 years ago since my version of Elite was out that I cared about it. And I've been caring about that game ever since it came out, you know, and it's a game that's basically everything else I play I have to judge against the Elite Frontier.
Even Nidhogg.
Pretty much, yeah, I mean, it's the reason I play all these open world games for a start, you know. But yeah, Elite, they only released, they have released an alpha for people who backed the Kickstarter at £200 and above. And it's a combat test, so they just wanted to let people understand what the combat felt like. And the combat feels really, really good, because it's quite slow. So part of the problem with space games is, or any kind of dogfighting game is, trying to keep the focus on what you're fighting. So they just slowed things down a lot.
Mm.
The other really smart thing they did was give you a completely clear canopy in your ship and allow you to look around it. And the UI is slightly transparent as well, so you never lose the ship.
So like, literally the entire ship around you is partly transparent?
Well, the cockpit, so the about 180 degrees above you, basically.
Okay.
And you, like armor, you can press a button and move your head around and look around. And yeah, so if you don't bother about that, and you just use the UI to follow things, it's really good still. They've got little tricks on there, like, the smoke slightly appears in space, which is probably not real, but you know, you can follow the tracks. They've got little triangles on each ship that you focus on, so you can tell what direction it's facing in by the triangles. The front one is filled in with black to blank, and on the UI when it gets overlaid, it's really clear where it's going, what's happening. So they had to get those things right. They also took a thing from, I think it's X-Wing and TIE Fighter. So when you're fighting, when things are getting a bit hairy, you've got the choice of shields, power and weapons, and you just shunt between all three of those. Say, oh, I need more shields now, so you'll start to lose weapon power, but your shields will go up, or I need to get the hell out of here, so put everything in the thing and boost away. I played for about 3 hours at Frontier with David Braben sat behind me, using a joystick, which I never used before. It was quite nerve-wracking, to be honest, but I managed to get away with it being pretty cool. It's great. I was really, really surprised, especially after Rebirth, which I thought was going to be good, and it turned out to be utter, utter shit.
Are they patching Rebirth? Is that a thing? Like,
they are doing, but they're not going to fix it. It's impossible to fix it. It's released in a way that's just... Like, the economy doesn't make sense. The ability to command your ships, which in the original X games, you could do over entire space. You know, you could be, like, sectors and sectors away from people and say, can you do this now and do this and do this now? Whereas Rebirth, I think you need to be, like, next to them and telling them and pointing, basically. It's like, go over there and do that, you know. That's not how you work in space. It works at all. So, yeah, they just released that broken. It's not going to work. But it looks really, really exciting.
When does it come out for people who didn't back it for 200 quid?
The beta for maybe, not half that, but maybe a bit less, I think is March, April.
Okay.
I think. I don't know, these things could break. But they've actually been quite on target. They said that when they first released Kickstarter, that the first playable version would be in December, and they released that. And I'm at the first closed beta test level, which was £100, because I kept on adding to my Kickstarter. And
you became more and more excited.
Well, I had the goal in mind, which was I paid 33 quid to begin with, but that was the pirate level. So you were given a certain amount, but I was just going to pay enough to get the ship that I could explore the universe quite safely. And the explorer level was 70, and you started on the edge of known space in multiplayer with a ship that was tooled up to be something you used to explore, which is how I always played the original games. I would just keep on flying out and out and out as far as I could go. But I got to like 70 at that point, and then I realised if I paid a little bit more, I could get the first closed beta test when it came out, so... But I still don't have it yet. I'm getting quite upset.
When are they going to add stuff which isn't combat?
Well, I've no idea. I think possibly the second closed beta.
Oh, okay.
But again, you know, this is all off the top of my head. But they consider it, I mean, it's not going to go, you know, it's not going to be like they release the combat and then they take it away and then release it. They're just going to keep on adding to that, basically, as far as I can tell.
Right.
So anyone who has it has basically got the first version of it, really.
Hmm. Have you played Star Citizen yet?
No, because it's not out yet.
No, but I mean, it was playable, right?
No. There was a hangar that was released when you walk around and look at your ship that you bought, and any ship you buy from them, which is the ridiculous model of selling ships that you could look at in a hangar before you get to play the game.
Yeah.
The dogfighting comp...
April, I think. Late March,
it got pushed back. I remember there being announcements about it.
But then they showed a video of it, and it was such a clusterfuck of a video, I couldn't actually tell what was going on.
Really?
Yeah, they did a live stream, and it was just really confusing. It looks like... I mean, everyone who could figure out what was going on seemed to be quite excited about it. And I was excited about it. That was announced before Elite was announced.
Yeah.
And I was excited about it. And I think I paid, like, 35 quid for that one. And then Elite came out, and I was like, damn! But, I'll probably play Elite a lot more. Just because... I think their open world is going to be a lot more interesting than Elite. Because the whole thing about Elite's open world is it will change. You can completely like stop supply lines from... So if, say at one point if there's a space station being built in a sector, enough people could get together to disrupt the supply lines of that space station to have the people who are building it go, no, we're not doing that anymore. But those people will be AI controlled, they'll be NPCs.
Hmm.
Don't think the players themselves can build space stations, but you can get involved in that kind of stuff. And those events will filter back into, so there's single player offline, which is just you, there's single player online, which is the events that happen in multiplayer will feed back into your game. And then there's co-op with friends, and then there's MMO. So they've got all those sort of things you can do really as well, which is again really exciting to me, because I could take friends in who are not really used to the world and just fly around with them and go, here's what this
is. Doesn't Star Citizen have the same thing?
I think so, but I don't think it'll be quite as... I don't think their world's going to be as big as Elite for a start. Elite's going to be like 100,000 systems based on the real world. Mm. Star Citizen, I think it might be its own place.
It's its own place, for sure. I don't know how manipulable it is.
Raven said to me that if you're in certain points in the galaxy if you're in the Sol galaxy, the night sky will be as...
Mm.
If you're on Earth, which... you'll be able to tell where the stars are because they'll be exactly where they should be. And the further out you go, it'll change the sky, but it'll still be realistic, you know?
Huh.
And if you're on the other side of the moon, for example, you know, you see more stars.
Hmm.
It's because it's dark, you know? He's really crazy about his astrophysics, which is quite exciting for me because I don't know anything about it. But the fact that he's so excited about it and the fact that he's building something that'll be quite real is really exciting to me.
I saw a news story about astronomers deciding suddenly that there are in fact four spiral arms to our galaxy rather than two. I bet there's a lot of people who are making sci-fi games going, oh, for fuck's sake!
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to impact them. But even like, the background stars will all be the same. The nebula, I think, might be realistic as well. So you'll be able to see the Horsehead Galaxy and whatever.
Surely that just means, because like, that's the way that most games get around about the fact that space is just black and dark. Yeah. It's like, no, the really colourful nebula in the background everywhere you go. Yeah. Like, surely Elite's just going to be
boring looking.
Could be, but that to me is boring in a really exciting way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You won't be able to see anything. You'll just see, you'll only be able to see the silhouettes of ships moving through interstellar space.
No, it's fine. That's how it is.
That's how it is. Okay.
But yeah, it was really good. I was really worried about it because of Rebirth and worried like 20 years on it will still be able to make it. But he seems to have managed to at least allow people to, like, you know, his enthusiasm for what he's made has actually seemed to have infected the entire company, which is kind of cool.
Should we do questions from questions?
Yeah.
We shall. Alexander writes, Dear CNC, I am not sure if I have to thank you or blame you, but since November, I completely stopped playing PC games. not intended effect of the podcast. That is all but one, FIFA 14. By you, I'm mostly being Graham, who a few podcasts ago was talking about his experience with FIFA 14. I gave it a try, and here I am. An interesting twist is that I never played FIFA before, and I approached it as a sort of Mass Effect-ish RPG. I started a career program from scratch, playing only for my character and slowly rising through the ranks. I tried to play for the whole team, but it felt too weird. Anyway, I have a lot of fun.
Did you have sex with anyone?
The question, can you guys, and Graham in particular, to comment a bit more on FIFA 14. When you talked about it earlier, it just came out, and by now you may have more thoughts to share. Thanks for the podcast, you're the best.
Well, I don't play it anymore, so maybe I can convince you to go back to the other PC games now. He's playing it like a Mass Effect-ish RPG. I've tried to get this across before on previous podcasts, but one of the reasons I like FIFA as a series is that it isn't just a football game or a sports game. It's also a real-time strategy game because you're dealing with the tactics of your squad and doing that. And it's a collectible card game if you're playing it through Ultimate Team and you're buying the sticker packs, basically, and they've got certain buffs and abilities and that sort of stuff. It is many different genres of games, so I can completely see you playing it as an RPG if you do the kind of be a pro game mode, and that's really cool. The reason I've stopped playing it now is because I was exclusively playing it in Ultimate Team multiplayer, and crosses are OP, or particularly headers are OP. And this is, they try, every FIFA game that comes out, they rebalance things in terms of how accurate certain moves are and how good goalkeepers are at saving those things and that sort of stuff. And in FIFA 14, it's really easy to do incredibly precise, incredibly powerful headers in a way which is almost impossible to defend against. And so if you're playing it in multiplayer, it doesn't matter how good a team you've built in Ultimate Team by buying your Panini football stickers and spending real money on it like I did. And it doesn't really matter so much how good you are at a lot of the different tactics and controlling it. Like, you just need to you cross the ball from the corner of the pitch and try and get a header on it. And the kind of game just devolves into that. And they tried rebalancing it, by fucking up some other parts of the game, but they didn't really fix the fundamental problem. And so playing it online and multiplayer is just super frustrating. And so I've kind of gone away from it. The other thing that changed is that Rich, who I didn't play FIFA 14 with, but played FIFA 13 with, and that was, my love for the game was mostly based around our competition over it. And he lives in Japan now, so
he fled, really.
Yeah, in fear over my slow growing domination of him.
The only football game I ever got into very briefly again in recent times was Football Manager, and that was because I didn't have an internet connection and needed something to search something in with, just to give me that sort of feeling about it. But I discovered when I was playing that Football Manager has all these sort of mods, and my favourite one was the post-apocalyptic mod, which is every stat was white. there was no famous players in the game anymore because they'd all been killed in the apocalypse, and you had to rebuild the entire football with random named players who you didn't know who were good. I just thought it was a great idea.
That is a great idea. Football Manager, I'm playing that obsessively instead of FIFA. Now it's taken over, and it has Steam Workshop support. They added proper editor either with this one or FIFA with Football Manager 13. I can't remember which. So stop playing FIFA and go play Football Manager instead.
Fix that guy's life. Mark Allport says, good day to you, great and Fubar. Question from question. Long one, so cut as much as you please.
Goodbye.
I consider myself to be one of the elite PC gaming race. And proud as I am of my superior platform for over 20 years, I do have two shameful and embarrassing situations that have arisen during my PC life. He said to cut this, so I'm going to summarise his two stories. The first one is he played Skyrim for 20 hours without knowing you could run. And then was surprised when noobs couldn't sympathise with his gripe that the walking speed was too slow. And then the second one is that he seems to use nude patches for everything, and his girlfriend found them. His fiancé found them, in fact. Which is less sympathetic, so.
Is he explaining anyway, why does that?
His,
I could kind of figure out the reason, but.
He says this was to add realism, but it dawned on me that it must be quite creepy for an outsider to discover this type of material had been curated.
Not just outsiders.
Or insiders. his question is, with you guys actually working in the industry, have you experienced any embarrassing PC-related moments that undermine your expected guru status? Keep it up, as my priest used to shout. Report, a scouser in Sydney.
Wow. I've got one. It involves Graham, actually. It's not a very long story, but that's cool. We were playing Mount & Blade in the office the very first time it was released. And we were running around trying to find each other and trying to look for each other, and it turns out it wasn't a multiplayer game. I'm in here, where are you?
I'm in the same town.
Oh, this isn't an MMO, is it?
This isn't really relevant to this question, but it's related to that anecdote. Rich and I once played an early version of Supreme Commander 2 for a preview. We thought instead of doing just a conventional preview, we'd actually play a match, and then we'd write about our own accounts of the match. And at some point, without us knowing, it got confusing because I was winning, and I was like stomping through his base with spider bots and completely destroying him. And he said across the room, "Have you got anything left?" And I kind of thought he was joking in some weird way, because I'm like, I'm just completely stomping everything. Like, he barely has anything left. I know what he has left because I can see everything. And then at some point we discovered that, like, he actually thought he was winning, and I thought I was winning, and we discovered that halfway through the game we'd become disconnected, and AI had taken over the opponents in each of our games, and we both just stomped our AI opponent and completely obliterated them. And we thought we had this amazing game where we won really good.
This is kind of the best possible
multiplayer experience. I actually think games should work this way. You should start in the same game, and then at some point AI just takes over. And the person who's winning, a really good AI, takes over his opponent. And the person who's losing, a really bad AI, takes over.
Martin's just awesome at everything.
No, I'm just shameful at everything. It's hard to...
No pride to this.
No.
Peter Dickinson. Sorry, Peter Dickinson. We're not doing yours yet. Andrew McFarlane asks, 2014, year of the indie developers? Any AAA titles coming out from the big studios?
Lots and lots and lots.
Yeah.
I was going to say Elite, but I've already talked about that.
Yeah.
Which is like the most exciting game for me ever.
Game that I'm now most exciting about? Game that I'm most excited about. This, which we didn't talk about in the last podcast because Chris wasn't there. It was Alien Isolation, which he went and saw for PC Gamer. And he came back. I've never seen Chris be as excited about a thing before. He was kind of like, this is the real deal. You know? which is exciting in itself. But it does, I don't want to kind of paraphrase it, because I haven't played it, obviously, and I'm sure Chris might talk about it when he's on the podcast next, but it does sound pretty fucking amazing.
It's weird. Any scary games, I just don't get scared in, so I just find them... bizarre collection of mechanics, like
I know you
like
said this
Slender
before.
Man, played. Is it The Arrival? It's called.
Yeah,
I played that by running up to the Slender Man and saying hello, and I just thought, well, that's not scary anymore. There's no point. So I just get bumping up against all these weird mechanics. Like with Outlast, I wasn't being scared when I was getting chased by something, but I knew I had to run away. So I just had to. I wasn't role playing someone who wants to hide under a desk or anything. I was just like, weird. What the hell do I've got to do here? I'm not scared. I don't know what I'm doing. There's no sort of explanation of that. Maybe if you are scared of those moments, instinct takes over, but I'm just like...
It's very difficult to put yourself in the role of somebody who's been compelled to do something by an emotion which you just don't have.
Yeah.
And I didn't really... I do get scared at games quite easily, but... and I find them very difficult to play, scary games, because obviously I like watching scary films, but your participation isn't necessary when watching a scary film for it to continue. Yeah. Whereas you have to play a scary game for it to continue, and that involves a kind of level of interaction which makes me very uncomfortable. So I find scary games quite difficult on the whole. But Amnesia, for example, just didn't scare me at all. I thought it was ass.
Yeah,
and I know other people say it's really great, but maybe it's just because it requires a certain kind of emotional resonance with you for you to fit in with its mechanics.
I just think it was too hokey.
Yeah,
Penumbra wasn't hokey in the way Amnesia was hokey. Amnesia was a proper haunted gothic mansion.
There's too many kind of repeating assets, I'm afraid. It looked too much like a Quake 2 mod. Yeah.
So maybe it'll never work.
Yeah, Alien Isolation could be really cool. The idea being that it's like an Alien 1 game.
Yeah.
And therefore, there's only one or perhaps two aliens, or like a very small number, and they're a massive, massive threat, and you can't defeat them. You're just trying to survive and escape and hide from them, which is could be really
I'm a lot more interested in routine, which is
got that sort
of theme to it, but it's also randomised. So part of the reason why I'm easy, or all those other games, is they're the same thing over and over again.
It's another first-person horror thing, is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's set in the moon. During, if like, the space age had come from the 1980s, so it's full of, like, you know, VHS tapes and things like that. But their whole thing is, again, it's like this roguelike, so it's permadeath and everything's randomised as well.
It's weird how many kind of retro-futuristic games are popping out now with the nods to the 70s and 80s. You've got Maya, which is very inspired by 70s films like Silent Running. No Man's Sky is inspired by the kind of sci-fi covers of the 80s. Mm. And, yeah... routine as well, and even Isolation is based on the kind of technology that you see in the first Alien film, so everything feels very kind of retro. You've got kind of big chunky things that are hobbled together, and they've got kind of CRT screens that flicker in green, pixelated and stuff like that.
What's the one the Amnesia people are making next?
Soma.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks
good. I thought the trailers for that were good, then I watched the actual game and I was like,
They moved on from Quake 2 to Doom 3.
Michael asks, when reading about games, I mentally replace the word cinematic with the word shit. Do you think this is fair?
No, I don't. Although, I see what he means, but I think there are two things there. Firstly, you've got to separate the word cinematic, the noun, from the word cinematic, the adjective. Cinematic, the noun, is usually the one that he's talking about, I think, that is problematic.
Oh, like cutscenes?
Yeah. Which are often kind of like an excuse for the narrative not being told through the gameplay in a honky way.
I think
you
might mean adjective.
Well, if he does mean an adjective, then there's two different ways to define it. Like, I think one of them is also good and one of them is bad. So cinematic, is it often used in kind of negative way when it's an adjective? Means like a passive spectacle, or a spectacle that you kind of consume passively. So like cinematic games, like the Naughty Dog games, are cinematic because you often feel very trammelled and you're basically just kind of observing and pushing yourself through this kind of otherwise constructed experience. Whereas I think the kind of cinematic that you can get, which is fucking awesome, are things like the 30 Flights of Loving, which used... means of editing your experience and constructing a world around you, which is based within the conventions of cinema, but is actually really powerful and interesting. In fact, games are really only just discovering the tricks that cinema learnt at the beginning of the 20th century.
Not many games like that, really.
No!
I mean, it's weird, because the exact experience I had with Naughty Dog was like, just make a fucking movie.
Yeah.
I hated Last of Us. I bounced right off it. I wasn't scared again. And all I was just like, well, you just really want me. I mean, it's not as bad as Uncharted, which is appalling.
I see. I like those films for what they are. Yeah, I really like the Uncharted series because they were just joyous kind of Indiana Jones roller coaster rides.
But I just felt like I wasn't involved in it at any point. Though, I mean, the worst ones are the Call of Duty games.
Yeah, because they're bad movies that you have to watch.
But
a lot of it's to do with your expectations going in. So yesterday I played DayZ and Rust, and there were these kind of loose experiences in open worlds that were unfinished, and then going from that to Metal Gear Solid Revengeance was like, oh, this is a proper fucking video game. In as much as I slash three men and then I get a cutscene of a giant robot stomping in,
and some people and then almost glowing finished bits. It before they sold it to you as well, which is a refreshing experience.
Almost.
Yeah, I'm never going to play in the Metal Gear. Actually, the new Metal Gear looks really interesting. I hope it comes
out. It's open world stuff.
Exactly. Just mention the world to me now, excited. I don't think he could force his ridiculous cutscenes into that open world, but he'll find a way.
He will.
I can't play anything with Revengeance in the title. It's just, can't do it. Vox Bulgai asks, dear croutons and crowbar salads, Tom Francis, why do you keep sending teams out with only one medkit? Spares save lives. He's talking about my XCOM games. And it's true, Ludwig Keitzman did die because I didn't send out two medkits. My justification is that you really need a support troop with the skill that gives him three uses for each medkit. Otherwise, you only get one use for a medkit. And then it takes up a whole equipment slot. And that could be used for a scope, which gives like +10 aim, or a grenade, which kills people. And so I don't give them that many medkits, and then they die. But my XCOM game's over now, so they don't have to suffer anymore. The last episode should have gone up by the time this podcast goes up. Avagad asks, Creighton Crow Baristas. I feel like we've had that one.
Mm. Still a good one. Still a good one.
Oh, actually, yeah, I think he says at the start, the hardest part of asking questions is coming up with a pun, and I got nothing. since it now appears that we're living in a magical early access age where every game is a beta and they each have infinite potential, is there anything you, as games journalists, can teach us about seeing through the buggy code or through the lack of features to see the true game? My experience with these early access games is that I like the features that are already there, but the promise isn't enough to sustain me, so I quickly become burned out. Looking at you, Prison Architect. How do you do it?
We just play with the games.
I think you've got to... just sheer brute force is the thing. Like, I played 25 hours of DayZ, and the first six when I first played that mod weren't fun in the slightest. And so I got past all its flaws and its bugs and so forth by just sheer blooded mindedness, because it sounded cool.
I had like 50 hours of armor before it came out. And all I was doing in that was flying around in a helicopter. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely and pleasant mechanic, that's the thing.
I would say that it's weird. It's almost like a loophole in psychology of between game developers and game players that early access works. Because when you're on the developer side of it, like, I did a beta for Gunpoint, but I didn't charge for it. And I didn't specifically, I thought about charging for it, and I was thought, no, that'd be terrible, because then people would get a really unfinished, buggy thing, but they pay me actual real money. And the fact that they would eventually get the finished game, it is no consolation, because at that point they've already played it a load, so that's of less value to them. And I really wanted it to be, I didn't want to be selling a thing that's bad. And as a game player, I think it's worth getting past that urge to be playing something as soon as it's humanly available. Mm. Like, just because you're really excited about it and it's going to be really good eventually, it doesn't mean you have to play it right now. Like, I'm the biggest fan of Supreme Commander in the universe, and a bunch of the people who made that game are now making another Supreme Commander type game that's set on spherical worlds, and you can launch a moon into your enemy's base, and it looks absolutely fantastic, and you can play it right now in early access, but it doesn't seem worth doing to me. I think, like, as excited as I am about that game, I want to play the actual finished game, and so at some point, I don't know when, but I just stopped needing to play things as soon as I possibly could. It used to be, like, as a journalist, obviously, you often have early access to things, and that would be fantastic. I'd be like, oh, awesome, I get to play this game like ages before everyone else. And in fact, I think you've got a better deal as a journalist then, because the people presenting it to you were hoping that you would give it positive coverage, and that like a lot depended on you having a good impression, so they wouldn't show it unless it was good, and they would only show you the bit of the game that is good. Mm. Whereas early access, they have no such reservations. They're happy to get, here's the whole fucking thing, and it's just a mess. It's just horrible.
It's an interesting thing, because someone was, I can't remember who it was, but they were saying, you know, the early access, you're not actually buying early access, really, even though it's called early access. You're paying for the game, you're just getting into it early, you know. So what you're actually buying there is a final product, but they're just letting you access it straight away. And it's up to you, really, if you want to try it out or not. But I tried a game called Snow, which really put me off early access, because I played it in September, and it was one of the most broken things I've ever encountered, and I was angry that they would actually charge money. And in my mind, to, you know, because you get this thing downloaded, you start playing it, and the fucking camera doesn't even work, you know, it just floats away. And that was my first experience with this game, and that was a very bad experience with this game. I was just like, how dare they charge for this? But, you know, they're actually charging for the final game, they just let me access it very early. It just depends on, but, you know.
But that's not how human psychology works.
Well, exactly. I mean, it wasn't until someone told me, but mentioned in that context, I'm like, should I have been angry at Snow? I still can't figure it out, you know. It's a new thing that's happening, really.
Well, it depends how much you trust them to actually get to the final product that you would want to play, doesn't it?
The trailers the trailers look really nice. Didn't have any kind of floating floating camera at any point. I honestly think, I mean, DayZ did the best thing for that kind of stuff, which was just say, don't buy it. Don't buy it unless you know you're buying something that's early and broken. And they should all put that right. Because in DayZ, it's very, even like, I went through all the other early access pages, and where DayZ has that warning, everyone else has fluff. It's a wonderful game, this is what's going to happen. And DayZ is just like, don't even think about it. Just go away, go and buy something else, don't worry about it.
You can't put something on sale and say don't buy it.
I mean, yeah, like, still
don't put it on sale then.
At least they warn people, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think to answer that guy's question, I don't think that the two situations are that similar. The main difference being that we don't pay money for a preview and that it's beholden on us to ask the devs how it's going to get to the final state which they promise. Whereas if you buy access to a game which isn't in a finished state, and you have no real way of demanding that they get to that final state. You've already given them the money then.
I mean, it's even worse with Kickstarter, where some games it's like, yeah, we're not going to finish it. Not even going to make it.
Yeah, that's happened a couple of times recently.
I mean, at least, you know, I guess in some way you're beholden to them if you want early access, but with Kickstarter it's even like,
I find blank. I keep having this at the moment where I find Kickstarter projects for things I'm interested in, and I'm about to buy it because I want the thing. And then I look and I see that it's already been funded, and I think, if it's already been funded, it's already going to get made. I'll just buy it after it's out and when I can find out whether it's good or not. Why would I spend my money now on a thing which is purely hypothetical?
What happened to that Homeworld Indiegogo, for which, if I understood it correctly, the people promising they would make it had no reason to believe that they would ever get the rights to make it.
No, they were going to try and buy it in the THQ auction, but then, which of course they didn't.
Because it was an Indiegogo
flexible funding campaign, which people did not properly understand at that point.
So yeah, I don't know what's happened to them. I think last I heard, Gearbox were angling to do something with the Homeworld license, so I don't know if
the license, and then they bought another company who were making a very Homeworld style game.
Wasn't them, was it?
No.
Okay, right.
It was
it's Homeworld developers, wasn't it?
It was the people who created Homeworld who had left Relic and founded a new company, and they were making a game called
Hardware,
yes. Yeah, and so now Gearbox have basically licensed the Homeworld license to them, so that's now an official Homeworld prequel,
which
is in development.
Someone should try out Half-Life 3.
As long as they don't call it Starware. Jammy says, greetings, Alexander the Great Irate Cobras. That's actually a pretty good one. He says in brackets, it's harder than it looks. I think that's a good one. There are games which I think I'd really enjoy playing, but some elements of the game design turn me off it. Games like Dota 2 and CSGO, where I worry that I'm going to mess up the game for everybody and get yelled at by a scary man.
I get that, yeah.
Or games like
5-a-side football.
Or games like DayZ and Rust, where the idea of getting mugged in-game by a guy on the microphone petrifies me.
Sorry.
My question is pretty simple. Are there any games which you think you'd enjoy, but some aspect of the design unintentionally makes you too scared, anxious, insert negative emotion? I think I agree with all of his examples.
Yeah,
But I wanted to add one, which is, so Dota 2 and CSGO, you know, if you fuck up, you really let down your team, and so you don't want to play as a noob with experienced players. But for me, I eventually stopped playing Team Fortress 2, not because I was bored of the game or because I didn't like it, but because I was just getting too into it. I was just getting too angry when I failed, and I just realized it was making me upset a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I sort of maybe given up on competitive games in general, like, except when you're in the same room, it's less of a, it's less emotional somehow, or it's more funny, like, more often when you get beaten.
Oh, I don't know, I find it the opposite. I mean, Nidhogg, maybe, because that's quite a frivolous game, seems quite like an exception, and because quite a lot of it's based on luck, to some extent, and less skill. But, the reason I don't like playing, fighting games, like Street Fighter and stuff like that, is because I hate the idea of being forced into a situation of one-on-one competition with somebody I have, like, some other kind of social relationship with. Because I find that very awkward. I used to think it was because I'm not very competitive, but actually I think it's because I really am very competitive, but I hate losing, and I also hate winning.
Yeah,
so it just makes me feel all kinds of bad emotions, and I don't really want to, you know, put that on top of a friendship I already have.
Yeah, I feel that way about playing with friends. Like, my worst situation is playing a one-on-one competitive game with a friend over the internet. So, like, it's... there's a pre-existing relationship, but also they're not in the same room, so it's not all fun and games. Like, when I'm in the same room, it feels a bit like, yeah, you're having a fun time. Yeah. If you, like, completely humiliate me, it's ah ha ha. And if I completely humiliate you, it's ah ha ha. But when it's online, somehow, like, the fact that you're not actually, you don't really, you're not sitting there laughing together, it can become more hostile more quickly. Or you can just think, you motherfucker.
I didn't play Spy Party online with anyone for the longest time.
Really?
Because I was just terrified about... Because it's all about reading people as a human, partly. And I was just terrified that I just wouldn't be able to do it. And what would that say about me as a person?
Are you worried that you'd find out you're a robot?
A little bit, yeah. But it's more that I was worried that I just... completely misinterpreted.
Do you have dreams about emotions? Unicorns running through the forest?
I was worried about just misinterpreting emotions and having... I don't know, it was a strange fear I had.
Wouldn't it be great if in the future, when you sign up for an account for something and they need to prove that you're human, you just play a round of Spy Party? And if you lose, then you're a robot.
And yeah, I mean, I stopped playing TF2 because I broke at least one mouse.
Yeah, I broke mouse as well.
And I was okay doing it in the house where it was John, Graham, Lisa and I all living together. But when I moved in with my girlfriend, I thought, yeah, she doesn't need to see that side of me.
You could just hear, like, the slamming of a mouse upstairs.
John used to jump all the time every time too. Imagine how much I played TF2.
Yeah.
Which I worked out was half an hour every day for however long it'd been released at that point. And that's when I stopped. I just uninstalled it at that point, so I'm not playing it anymore. But yeah, I broke one long serving mouse. It lasted about 6 years, that one. It was a good one. But yeah, when it broke, I was like, okay, I should probably not do this anymore.
Yeah, it makes me... makes it hard for me to get excited about any competitive games online. Like, even if there's a new one coming out that has loads... Like, there aren't, really, but if there was one, if there was Team Fortress 3 and it had amazing new classes and cool abilities and stuff, I'd be a little bit like, I don't know if I'm going to really get into it, because I don't really trust myself to actually be a happy person and play a competitive game.
It's been a while since I've got involved in something that felt competitive. Like, competition can come in DayZ, but it's not really competition, it's survival.
Yeah.
But I haven't played TF2 for ages. I didn't get Battlefield 4 when it came out. I don't install any of the Call of Duty games.
I quite like competitive games when I'm on a team with people I know against people I don't know.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, I don't need to think about their feelings. Yeah, exactly.
The other people are essentially robots.
Yeah, no, it is co-op, but against really sophisticated AI.
So you don't worry about letting your teammates down in that situation?
No, I do, but only if there's like a massive kind of score differential.
Mm.
It's usually your team sucks as well. So.
Well, it depends who I'm playing with. But yeah, there is a bit of a problem with Counter-Strike because a lot of the people who I like playing with, because they're nice, are way, way better than I am. So that's kind of awkward. And me and Rich Stanton come back from the pub. We decide we're going to play Counter-Strike. And like, yay, you know, Emily Richardson's on or Owen's on and they're nice people. When we get on, we just ruin their evening.
But, I've played with them. I've never found them, like, upset us.
No, they're extremely nice and patient, which makes me feel even worse.
I just want you to have fun, man, that's all.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bob writes, hello, CNC Musings Factory. yeah, there's an asterisk next to that, and the asterisk goes to games that make you go,
That guy's thought guess, really hard about that.
I don't like Bruce Springsteen. And I really tried to. I was a blogging CD... Is this going to be about games at all? I was a blogging CD reviewer and thought my complete ambivalence to an artist so generally well-regarded would put me at a disadvantage. Turns out the fact that I can't write for Toffee was a much bigger disadvantage. That's great. Anyway, this got me to thinking. Are there any games that are generally thought to be amazing that you just can't get it?
Most strategy games for me, but that's just a feeling in my brain of being able to not be able to strategize. I don't, Mass Effect, still get it.
Thank God Chris isn't here. He'll probably left on you, throttling you while singing something from Les Mis.
Mass Effect either, right? Yeah, you played a bit of Mass Effect 1 at least.
I think I get it, though. I understand what the appeal is, and that's why I keep going back and trying it. And the problem I have with it is the combat, which pretty much everyone says isn't very good in Mass Effect 1, and I should stick with it until Mass Effect 2 when it gets much better.
Yeah.
So I would enjoy those games if I could just get over that initial hump. And I think that's the case with a lot of games, is that you've got to get past that first 4 or 5 hours of shit and then
it had terrible shit into place and I just didn't care about the rest of it because of that. Dead Space as well.
Yeah, I didn't get really excited about Dead Space. Well, again, it's a game you need to be scared by, I guess.
Partly.
I like hacking the limbs off. It's got, you know,
I think it was too slow.
It was I mean, so it wasn't scary.
Oh, the ripper was great.
Yeah, it wasn't scary, and then it was like just too slow, so the movement just felt really cumbersome, and I thought. Yeah.
The camera really annoyed me because it's on the right hand side and it's just weird on the right hand side.
Oh yeah, so far over as well. It's not like
you
want to
see
bit.
Something on the left hand side. There's like actual monsters that might jump at me from there.
You can skip Mass Effect 1, and because Chris isn't here, I can safely say he totally agrees.
Well, I usually tried Mass Effect 2 as well. Shit, Chris.
Oh really? Oh okay. Yeah. I really like Mass Effect 2, but I didn't get on with Mass Effect
1. I think 1 is better.
I want to play the story. I want the sanctity of the story. I just need to go back and put it on easy mode and just, you know. Just...
Yeah, I'd recommend that.
I don't understand why people liked World of Warcraft when it came out either.
I'm not really into MMOs at all, actually. I don't find grind to be at all appealing. I don't know why anybody would do it to themselves.
Grinds aren't innate to MMOs, though. EVE Online does have grind, sort of, really, I guess. So I take that back.
No, I agree, but it frustrated me that a lot of them followed that template.
Yeah, that's definitely
it's
true.
Very templatey.
And the kind of hot button combat where you're waiting for cooldowns and it's just these two animations that clip through each other. It looks kind of
I didn't have fun in World of Warcraft, but I just wasn't playing the game again. Was running around.
Yeah, or looking at the scene.
Yeah, exploring was great.
With, I think Tom, I think.
Yeah.
Like, the best time I had with World of Warcraft, I met up with Tom and John Walker, and we just went for a jog, basically, across Azeroth. And it was lovely. Hmm. And then, when we actually had to fight things, that's when we all quit the game.
MMOs now are kind of great. A lot of them. Like, Planetside's fantastic and stuff like that, because they don't have that kind of boring cruft that they've inherited from World of Warcraft.
I don't know about Springsteen, but I can say that disliking a really popular game doesn't necessarily mean you can't be a games journalist, because Lord knows we all dislike really popular games.
I think that's probably all the time we have, actually, this week, since it's a short episode.
Craig has to go catch a train.
Indeed.
Bus, actually.
National Express.
Yeah, it was like 3 times cheaper than the train, and it gets an hour later, and I've got plenty of television to watch, so I'm fine.
Yeah, I like the bus.
There you go. Sponsored by National Express.
Can we play the Divine Comedy song?
You can send us more questions for next week's podcast at questions@creatingcrowbar.com, or you can tweet them at Creating Crowbar, or you can tweet us individually. I'm at Marsh Davis.
I'm at Gonnas, G-O-N-N-A-S.
I mean, you're not going to get me to get a question on the Creating Crowbar, but I am at Buck Sexington.
And I'm at Pentadact.
And you can join our forums, which are at our website at www.creatingcrowbar.com, where there's lots of nice people who you can talk to about games. You can even ask questions there if you really want to divide your questions amongst 3 different kind of questions in the medium.
Not that we resent having created that subform.
No, that might have been a mistake. Anyway.
Also buy t-shirts. You can buy t-shirts.
Yes,
buy
please, t-shirts. Please buy t-shirts. Or don't think of it as buying t-shirts. Think of it as supporting the Creating Crowbar podcast and also getting a free t-shirt of your choice.
This is almost like the early access argument.
Well, you know.
The t-shirts won't improve over time.
No.
Exactly. If anything, I'll deteriorate. But after a very long time, because they're high-quality t-shirts.
Thanks for listening, everybody!
That was surreal.